Today is December 4th, 1994, and I'm Lisa Stroh, and I will be interviewing Betty Springhill, who is a teacher and a principal in the Kodiak Island Borough School District. Hi, Betty. Would you please just explain to us a little bit about the years that you were involved in education and some of the changes that you've seen over the years?
Well, I came to Kodiak to teach in 1944, and my certificate was from the Territory of Alaska. And the territorial schools were run from a central office in Juneau. And there was a very, very capable commissioner of education, it was called, from the territory, a man named Dr. Ryan, who controlled the schools all over the state from Juneau. And we were instructed to, we sent our schedules in to the state of, I keep calling it state, but territory.
It was a territory. Okay.
And then you would say at what time you were teaching math, or if you did, and so on. You post that on your door, and all over the territory, every school in the territory had these schedules posted. If they were lucky enough to make a surprise visit, airplanes were not common at that time, but if they were able to get in, you better have your schedule posted, and you better be doing what they said. If you were doing math at 10 o'clock, you should be doing math at 10 o'clock. Now, this sounds very threatening, but as I look back up over the years, it was a really wise way to try to insist that teachers be doing these things all day, every day. In addition to that, he had published and sent to each teacher in the territory a written guide from the first introductory note in every section of about 3 inches thick and in place. I wish I had one now, but it's impossible. And if you just taught from that, the kids would learn something.
Now, who wrote that guide?
Ryan, Dr. Ryan.
Who was the commissioner?
Very, very clever, outstanding man. He was here for many years. So I was teaching, when I came, I taught 5th and 6th grade combination. I had 35 students, and then I taught all the music groups in my school. I taught it out in the hall. And we were pretty well packed into a badly ventilated room with very poor lighting. And somehow we managed, and the kids just never seemed to get sick. They came every single day to school.
Now,
and it was predominantly Native children.
Was this here in Kodiak?
Kodiak, right there.
Just here. Okay. The downtown school.
Yes, at the downtown school. We had the grade school was on the main floor, and the high school was in the rooms downstairs. And it worked out very well. And then we had to bring in an auxiliary room to be brought into the Quonset room base to use as auxiliary classrooms, and they used them. They built a building for home ec, and it was pretty crude what we had. But for some reason, nobody noticed. I didn't even feel put upon that I had 35 students packed into a room, and then was asked to play music. It didn't even occur to me in question. I don't know if you're stupid or naive, or we just were there to teach, and the children were there to learn, and the children were there to learn.
That's right. Now, how many students did you have then, K-12?
Let me see. It would have been about 400.
Okay, sure. So about 400, and then how many teachers do you have about?
Well, there was one third, second, third, fourth, and I dropped out the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth. So that was 7 teachers, and then about 4 or 5 teachers.
Probably about 11 or 12 teachers.
Okay.
Okay.
And so it was a say, I never did understand why they wanted to come every single day to school and every day off. And I talked to some of them later, who are older people now, and they said, well, that was a part of their existence. Their friends were there, and we didn't have pull-off activities, but we did have something going that they loved. Yes, yes. They were busy every day, and they were good.
So you didn't have to discipline?
No. We had a superintendent. We had an office in the building. There were no administrators. And we had no counselors, no psychologists. We did our, we just flew by the seat of our pants. And sometimes we had to make decisions which were really not equipped to make because you had no resources.
Now, did you go to school 9 months a year, and then were they off for 3 months? Or was the school day pretty much the same as it is today? You know, like 8:30 to 3:30, or was it longer?
Pretty much more. Okay. In the upper grades, but a little bit got out there.
And then the kids, I suppose, just brought their lunch to school.
Well, they could go home if they wanted.
Oh, okay.
We were all in the downtown area.
Okay.
There was nothing out there where the main school is now. That was trees.
Now, how did they get to school?
Walked. Well, somebody had to come around. Everything was just that.
Very special. Wow. So then, how long were you at this main school? Is that what they called it?
They called it the downtown.
Oh, okay.
And, we had that building up through the tidal wave, and even used it after the tidal wave. And I was then going between the two buildings. Made by that time, Maine had been built. Now Maine was built. This was 1953. So in 1953, when they built the Maine school, they still had to build the downtown. And we kept it until it was condemned and get out.
What year was that?
It was about 1965.
So was that right after the time wave then?
We must have kept it at least 2 years after that. And during this time, my school history was, then I taught fifth grade, and then we had, then I made moved to seventh and eighth, and so all through this, I was teaching them 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and music. Those were the different classes that I had. And so then we decided that it was getting big enough that we better have some administrators. So I had the position without credentials. So I went to the University of Washington and got the master's degree. And I got that in the 60s.
Okay. Did you go to school during the summers and get that, or did you take a few years off?
I did. 4 summers. Long, hot summers, what do you mean? But it was, I made the choice to go into administration. And I was never sorry because I enjoyed teaching and I enjoyed administration almost as much. Sometimes I thought I missed the classroom more, but I had such a great experience with staff and students. It was before it got ugly, you know. And, I didn't have any of the very pleasant memories of those years. They blend into one another.
And even though you're an administrator, you still keep really close tabs with those kids. It isn't like you're just removed from all those kids.
So when we became a state, by this time, we were making transition, and I was a member of the Territorial Curriculum Committee to make the transition to statehood. And so I wrote my thesis on that period, that decade.
That's just incredible.
About those 10 years of transition, we were planning for it, too, probably going to come. And so we made the transition very easily to a State Department of Education. And by this time, we were not such a rural situation. We then, by this time, had a superintendent, and we had a junior high, we had the high school. But there was a long period of time when the regional high school, is where the high school is now, regional high school. And the concept was that they would bring the native children from different areas they're together, and they were wonderful.
And now,
in Qua,
they brought kids in from like the Aleutians, right?
Going up in the mainland and everything, and they fought the Eskimos, fought the Aleuts. It was a disaster. They had to give it up. So the building then reverted to the borough. By this time, after statehood, we had divided into boroughs, and then we were a borough school, which would be like the county school. And during this period, the adjustments were gradual enough so that nobody was jarred or startled. Everything happened in good order. And so we made the transition from the territorial system to a statehood system and a borough system. And somehow along the way, we had good leadership, excellent leadership. We had a superintendent of schools who was so wise that he was way before his time. And he guided us through all of this.
And what was his name?
Ivor Schott. And he was Mr. Kodiak Education. He had so wise and so well. And during this period, we were all setting up the borough was not easy task. And defining the school district lines. And we thought having village schools as a part of the borough. We wanted only the road system, the entrance. But they threatened us and said, we'll take them all or we'll define the boundaries. So that left us for all the village schools. I thought that they were doing them a disservice to change from the state school system to the borough school system, because even though they said that it was completely unsatisfactory to have the dual system, but we were were out in the villages, they complained bitterly about it, but I really thought it's better now, but it didn't happen overnight. This was a dramatic issue. From territorial schools, just BIA schools, they went. From BIA schools to borough schools, it went that way. The state then was supervising these schools, and then when they became a part of our borough, we had our hands full to provide for them.
So you were thinking...
We're still not doing it well, but when we started, we were really floundering.
So in your idea, you were thinking how the borough schools, which would be the schools on the road system here in Kodiak, and let the states
exactly
still take care of them.
And I felt for many years, I don't know, I think the borough has done well. We spent a lot of money on the village schools. And that's another thing. I didn't see, you're not on a level playing field because the villages surrounding the streets, they pay no property tax.
I didn't realize that.
But the state stepped in and did almost 90% funding of the schools. And that's really what has saved us. We couldn't have done it on our, we couldn't have done it with our local tax rolls.
No.
Impossible. So the result was that over the years, as I've observed, I think they've done really quite well with providing education to these village schools. I was amazed when the Molly Hooch Act came along and demanded that we have a high school in each village, in each state.
And when
that
was
to
that?
Me, well, not too long ago. Lost track. But I thought that was an ill-conceived idea. I didn't care whether it was legal or not. But those try to provide laboratories for science and so on in each one of them. And it has not been good. You know that.
Right.
I think it's adequate, but it's not good. And that was a terrible blow. I shouldn't be surprised at that. So anyway, those were the transition periods, from territorial to state, and then the rural school system, which we have right now. And as I say, it didn't happen suddenly, it happened gradually. And a lot of us were involved with local politics at the time. I served on the borough and the city. And a lot of the people were, but at any rate, we were beginning to take an interest in what was going on in the affairs of our community. And that was the, you mentioned the tidal wave. That was a terrible shock to us, because we turned the school into an evacuation center. And people came up there receiving devices on the gym floor and so on. That happened for several days. And during this period, I had to revise everything. The teachers were so good. They just were so adaptable. I couldn't adapt about them. For instance, I'd made up withdrawal slips. Well, maybe we had 100 withdrawals in the day. The next week, we might have 50 withdrawals. It was a scream. And the teachers really did well with it. But it was so crazy, this business. And we were running two schools at the time. I was put down on the enemies, and I was back and forth. And then later on, we got bigger, and the East School, until we finally settled down. But the wonderful part was that the teachers just accepted what it had to be. About a week after we returned to school, we were out of school about a week. And when we went back to school, I was at and we had an aftershock that was so bad. Where I thought the building was going to fall down. And I remember, from when I was much younger, leaving my office and running down the hall in such record time that I don't know what kind of shock and adrenaline I had, so that I could see what was happening in each room. And those children had done exactly what we'd been instructed to do. And there they were, huddled around their teacher. And we didn't have one child who panicked. The high school went wild. They were running all, they couldn't control them, they went wild. But those little kids depended on their teachers. We had had instructions. We had people come from San Francisco and all over to talk to us about what we should do. And we learned that the teachers learned the lesson well. And those little children did exactly what they were going to do. I looked down off the doorway, it was just extreme. And I just shot down that hall, and I just remember seeing all these things, I couldn't believe it, because I thought that it was so hard, I thought it had done some structural damage. It did not.
And those kids just huddled around their teacher?
Their teachers huddled around the door.
Okay. So then, in the tidal wave, or that aftershock, was that like, did you say a week after?
A week after, it was the most terrible thing. I really startled some more, I think, than we were all home. When the earthquake and the tidal wave took place in East Great Region. And then this took place after we got all the children back to school, and it was a shock.
Okay, and so then you were at the main school and the downtown school when that happened?
I happened to be back at the main school at that time it happened. And the downtown school handled themselves well too. I don't know, we were so lucky that we got teachers who were so wise. And so capable that when these emergencies arose, they were right on top of it.
Had most of the teachers grown up around here then?
No, they were from all over. They were a very homogeneous group, mixed.
Yeah, heterogeneous, whatever. Yeah. Okay.
They were from all over, but they just, we were just lucky. We had this high school teachers that just knew how to handle themselves and how to handle the children. And we couldn't have gotten through it if we had one person fall along the way. Everybody just
long did that aftershock last?
Well, it wasn't, maybe just so many seconds, but it was so hard and so sharp that it just, you just felt that the building was going to give away, that something was going to crack.
So then that lasted for a little while. Then did the kids go home then just right after school?
Right there.
Then did other families come to the school?
By this time, there were bulletins every day being sent out from my office and from the high school, I'm sure, telling the parents exactly what we were doing and what to expect and what we were doing in case we were afraid. And so there was very close communication with parents continuously. The machine was going all the time.
The mimeograph machine.
The mimeograph machine was hot.
Okay. Wow, this is something. Okay, so then after the tidal wave, 2 years after that, they destroyed the downtown school. And then you went to main school.
I had, yes.
Full time.
Full time.
Okay, then was main school like grades 1st through 8th?
K through 8. I had K through 8.
Okay.
And at one time I had 750 students, no important teachers.
It's just a
It was. It really was. Then, when we saw that we had this man, in the meantime, Peterson School was still a military-based school. Like Port Isles and Elton Park.
Okay.
And they were not incorporated into the borough until several years later. We didn't acquire the, I don't know the year that we got Peterson School as part of the borough, but that's another transition. But for all this time that we're talking about the tidal wave period, they were under the military command. So their rules and what they did were different. We followed the civil defense suggestions. People came in here to help us, especially. And it was a lot of fun. We needed it.
Was main school then the only elementary school?
That's right. So then by that time, in high school was at the other end.
Oh, like where the middle school is?
Right.
Okay.
That's right. And so by that time, we had built East. And East did not get finished on time, so we had to shift for at least September to December. And then they got into their own school. And that was an entirely different than it was to get people. By this time, people were getting to settle out in Belgium. Belfast, the Noshka Bay area, that had been nothing but woodland, but as the borough sold that land off and people began to build homes there, then we did start to provide bus service.
In about what year was this?
Closer to Maine to go out there to equalize, and I had to use, of course, the educational concept that your child is much better off in a smaller class. And so it was a little adjustment for the parents, too, because we had a line sort of drawn arbitrarily, and it was only about a block from the main school, and they didn't go out that way. So it was kind of interesting. Adjustment. I don't know if they still have that or not.
They do have some districts that they're worried
about. But now they're much more relaxed about giving people a choice.
Right.
We didn't. We couldn't. we just couldn't relax that rule.
Everybody would want
and
to
they,
go.
And the parents finally adjusted to it. But it, it was an interesting time. Now, during this time, the after we became a state, we had a state and I'm a Shanta Mata. And so every year we receive from Torres and all of these books and such. Maybe we would adopt math on the book so we could examine all that. And each teacher was to examine the book and make comments, shop the book to the state commission, and they would adopt the book. And if you didn't do so, you wouldn't get rewarded.
Okay. So and the whole state had to use the same.
That's right. That's right. And then, of course, that's changed a lot. Now you have lots of anything you want. If I could, when I was higher, but the DSTAR program throughout the entire system, Borough, I couldn't believe it. Why? And so that was amazing to me, but apparently they have a lot of leeway now to do their own. They won.
Okay. Oh,
my God. Isn't the first one the stars?
I think so.
Oh, thank God that's over. I'm a wreck. So those Broncos make me crazy.
So then, what about like when World War II was ending? How did that fit into all of this?
We continued to, the schools continued to really steady growth, not dramatic growth, steady growth. And businesses began to start things that hadn't been before, and of course that, there wasn't as much of a drag. We still have good front buildings downtown and a winding main street for years until the Tiger Place. And then urban renewal came in and created this area down here. This is all urban renewal creation.
With straighter streets.
And straighter streets and go up to the lot line. Didn't provide proper parking. We're suffering now. And I have a lot of bitterness about the way the government handled the urban renewal program. And it seemed to be that all they wanted to do was to get those businesses back. And so they created these shoeboxes. And we had many, many meetings that my husband and I were involved in that business in town. And we went to meetings and we all agreed. What we wanted to do was to make this look like a Russian village. So the exteriors of the buildings would be logs and sod roofs. That went out the window right now. Even though the people said they were more willing to whatever it took to wait longer, that was just deep sick. Urban Renewal wanted to get out of here, and they did. They left this way. It had parking, it had heights, sewer and water, it was a disgrace. I know at one time I thought what we should do is just have contact with somebody else. And so what you have is these shoeboxes.
Right.
So it looks like rolling those shoeboxes. No creativity. It's not the town. And it looks old, but it's, as cities go, it's comparatively new.
Right.
So that was the school. But the schools weren't affected by all this promotion. They just went steadily forward, and Ivor Schott guided the borough on where to allow land. I can remember when this came up about the North Star School. I remember all those years ago, he said, now your next school, and this is nothing but forest out there, must be out Farm and Oshkosh area.
Wow. He was way ahead of his time. What year about was that? 1960s.
Oh, that was in the 1960s. He was such a wise man. He's way ahead. And it was his prudence and his wise judgment that kept us on such a steady, even field through all of these passages. He just seemed to have that ability.
And which years was he here?
He must have come in 19. Now
is he still alive? Is he passed away?
No, he lives in New York. He was, I wonder what we would have had if we had some of these less group people guiding us through these strange times. He was conservative, but not to the point where he couldn't see progress. Very, very wise man. I think that I can contribute the fine, the really interesting career I had was in
you've been helping to help just see from the superintendent's standpoint all of the different things that he had.
Yes, because seen. Look at the different times he came in. Marshall in. I shall remain silent.
Oh, okay.
But then came
Noreen
came in there, and then with
okay, yeah,
that's right. Noreen,
that's what they said.
She got third grade for me.
Oh, okay. What was her first name?
Thompson.
Okay.
So during these changes, I can't pass judgment on any of those superintendents. I am on Dr. Land. I won't talk about that. But those that came along, they were nice. So we had the spirit of Antonin, and that's why we just like to dream. I was out by this time. I was retired, so it really didn't, I didn't pay as close attention. But I was very close to Noreen, and I think she did a fine job. She was stable. I don't know, really, it seems that John Whitby seemed to do a wonderful job. He was that kind. And now they have the man that my daughter says is perfect.
Dr. Johnson, I mean, he is so good. And, you know, coming from the administrator standpoint that I am, he really pulls you in. And he's such a good role model. And there's so much to do.
He's on the strategic
okay. And he's just as calm and as can be.
So over the years we've had these different changes, and there's been steady growth. You know, the high school has moved and squeezed in here, and now and
right, you know, the committee. I think those recommendations.
And then of course I think I don't know just remember what the North Star School is supposed to provide for, but I assume it's for children living out.
I think not this next fall, but the next spring or fall, right? And they were going to try to get it built so it just would be fall and then five and then they would put it back either half.
Now all these years that I'm talking about, we were very conservative in our curriculum. We didn't have any dramatic changes in what we taught, how we taught it. We did make adjustments for the more gifted students in minor ways, but we didn't spend a lot of money. For some reason, we were very conservative with money. And so the result is that we didn't make drastic changes. And the only time that happened was when Dr. Lind and his wife came in and created an ungraded primary that was a disaster. And that's the only time that we had any kind of a wave of social
dissension.
Of black people.
You know, these days there are a lot of teachers that are really in the teachers' groups and the unions, and you negotiate a lot. Did you have much of that?
It was just starting. When I was still there, I was president of the KDA when I was principal. We didn't go on before the administrative stuff. That was 1971, I think, when they decided to form the administrative. Before that, we were all one.
And then you, the administrators and the teachers, were all one. And then did you negotiate with the school board, or how did?
Very little negotiation at the time. It was just like a dream to me when these negotiations came on. That was after 1970. There was a little being done, but it was not much. And we had the Alaska Education Association, where we had delegates go from our school, and we put our input, and they did make plans for salaries, future, and so on, but it didn't seem to make a big difference. And then they became the NEA Alaska executive director, and those things all gradual changes too. We think right about the time I retired. So this whole thing of negotiations is kind of like a dream for me. And I don't think the teachers here have gotten ugly about it.
No.
They've been firm, and that's a good negotiator. This is all pretty disturbing
here.
And I don't think that they have been unreasonable and militant and so on. But they have been firm.
I think that there's been a pretty good relationship in the past.
That's my observation now as a retired teacher.
And I don't really know either, because I'm new, but I think the relationship is pretty good.
Well, they've had some pretty good negotiators on both sides. And somewhat, the has prevailed, because we haven't had the ugliness here. I don't know how we're going to handle it. We were so close to the teachers and the administrators. If you had died it off, I would have felt that loss.
So, now, when you first started teaching, did you get any benefits at all, like any insurance benefits or anything?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing.
That's what I was thinking. They didn't have those back then.
But we did, toward the end of my tenure, that we were getting, we had help.
Okay.
And we had the travelers and so on.
Okay.
And that was very, very important.
Okay.
Then the next one, in the 60s,
sorry, that's interesting.
And we had nothing but very tiny salaries in the early 80s. But everything was relative. Prices were low. And so you were even able to save.
Now, you know, nowadays the wages in Alaska are higher than, say, the wages in Lower 48. I mean, the cost of living is higher too. Did you still see that back, say, in the 40s and 50s, that the wages were higher? Do you know?
No. And only had 1 year, and then I married, and I became part of the Tucson family. But that first year, I lived with a friend, and I was able to save a little money on that. But as I say, everything was relative. Clothing was cheap, and not plentiful either. We didn't notice that. You don't have it, so you don't have it.
Right. So did you just, did you wear it, like just a dress that you
had? I did. I wore an evening dress.
Oh, wow. Well, now the schools, they didn't have electricity or running. Did they have electricity? Okay. And running water and everything?
Okay. We had a bathroom at the old downtown school with 3 stalls and 1 washbowl, and the teachers had to use the same time. We never got any jabs over that. And everything. I never remember crises over things like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's always just your perception of how you encounter those things.
Right? I never heard the teacher use that. We didn't have it. I don't see.
Just one last question. You seem so neat, I'll tell you. You know, a lot of people, when they retire here in Kodiak, they move away or whatever because they want a family road system, they want access to shopping centers and things like that. I guess my question is, what has led you to just stay here in Kodiak?
Well, I spent most of my life here. I was young 19, and I'm old now. So most of my life was spent right here in Kodiak. And I have 1 daughter, and she left and went to Colorado College for 4 years and wanted to come back here, married a fisherman, and I have 2 beautiful grandchildren. My husband and I, we were so pleasant. When we traveled, I was married to a Finlander. And so we went to Green Valley, Arizona. We went to Florida. We went here and there. And so we went to Green Valley and we looked at each other. Neither one of us were golf people, or we didn't want to do it. So he just couldn't do it. Let's go home. And we put a bid on the place. We didn't get it.
This was in Arizona?
Green Valley.
Okay.
So we came back and we never
really. And what year was that you put that bid in? Retired.
It was just not right. Besides that, I was still active in many different things here in the community. And he was still working. We had this little gift shop called Dad's Art. And he had a barber chair in there. He was with me all the time. So the result was that we never, and then Mario had no desire to leave for the act. And one child.
Right.
I didn't know that I know.
This is home. This is home. Well, I really appreciate it.
Oh,
you are just incredible. I mean, really?
And you know, all along this time, when I look back on it now, I have.
Or do you think it was just your perception of
the world? No, I just think that being at the right place at the right time with the right product, was just, yeah, I just was terrifying. I liked her. I really attracted her.